Now, when I was looking at your yearbook, I noticed that there was a big fire on Main Street in December of 1950. There are some pictures in the back of your yearbook. I wondered whether you saw that or...
Fire on Main Street.
Is that the 51 yearbook?
Yeah.
I think there might be... I'm a big one for local history, so I'm always... Well, maybe...
It might be on back. Let me see.
It's right towards the end. You can see the aftermath of the fire. And it was at the corner of Main Street and Washington Street. No, but it's one of these groupings.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Downtown burned down.
Yeah, it must have been a big deal.
Oh, yeah. The main block of downtown Lexington burned down. Across the block in front of the hotel?
Yeah.
And it burned the whole block down.
The whole block?
Yeah, it took out the whole block. I'd forgotten about that.
Did you all go up and watch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was quite a disaster. It burned, if you'll check the city records up there, I'm sure you'll find something about it.
No, I'm sure I will, but I just noticed it, and I said, oh, I've got to ask him about this.
Yeah,
this
well, it was just a fire, and there used to be a restaurant on Main Street up there across from where the hotel was. And... But essentially, it was that whole block that caught on fire and took it out, which so often happens, you know, in small towns.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that must have been a big deal. Now, you mentioned a restaurant a while earlier. You talked about going down to the diner. Are you talking about Steve's Diner?
Steve's Diner.
Tell me about Steve's Diner.
Well, Steve's Diner was at that time... It was like the old-fashioned diner that really looked like a dining car. And it had booths in it, and it would stay open all night, being on the highway there, and would fill up with truckers, etc. But it was a place that you could go get something to eat regardless of what time of night it was. And so bottom line is, it was kind of a hangout. I can remember it had... in letters that had been poked in, I guess, kind of like felt, you know, where they have the things that you can stick them in. And it said, be patriotic, lick your plate clean. And obviously a holdover from World War II. It was still up there even then. But Steve's Diner was down below the filling stations there.
I'm hoping to get a picture of Steve's Diner because
obviously. Last time I was back, Steve had moved. It had been torn down, and Steve was moved out of town up on the hill up there.
Right. Well, even that's 70s. Gone now.
That's gone too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course there was the grill on up the street, going the other way. But it closed at night. After 12, 1 o'clock, it would close. It had good chili. I remember being in there one night and all sitting around drinking beer, and the goldfish eating craze was going on. And they had a fish bowl in the front there. And one of the guys had a few too many, reached in and got a goldfish by the tail and swallowed it. And they didn't discover it until we were starting paying the check and going out the door. And they really put up a real protest about that.
Well, that's the first goldfish eating story I've had. Well, what other Lexington hangouts were there?
That's about it. There wasn't all that much to do.
It was sort of a sleepy little town, wasn't it?
Well, it was either those two or one of the fraternity houses. Yeah. And, you know, with all the fraternity houses and the lounges and the parties that went on, you didn't need to need to have other places.
Tell me about the parties. What were they like?
Well, you know, parties could be almost any time, any night. Often there'd be some of the early party goers would start on a Thursday night and have a party, but normally, you know, sit around, drink beer. There was always a joke around the Beta House that their children were going to be born blind and deaf because the basement of the lounge was always dark and the music was always turned as loud as it would go. Brian Bell, I remember he always would like to play the piano, but the piano was on the main floor, and he couldn't play it very well, but he liked to play it anyway because everybody would sing with him.
Were there any particular bands you remember, or musicians, acts that would come?
Not really. I know for the Fancy Dress, they'd always try and have a pretty good size name band, and that was more for the girls, I think, than for the fellas.
Now, did you go to Fancy Dress?
Yes.
And did your future wife come?
Yes, she even had her come up for Fancy Dress all the way from Texas. I guess it was a sophomore year after she came back home. Showed up and I had a rented costume for her, which is what they used to do.
And was Fancy Dress a big deal?
Well, it was a big party. Oh yeah, it'd be a three, four-day party. It'd start, depending on how soon your girl could come, well, it would start Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Always a big brunch at the frat house on Sunday late morning lunch type arrangement.
Sort of wind the whole thing up?
Yep.
And where did all these girls stay?
Well, hotel downtown. Often, as I recall, they would, sometimes they would have a room at somebody's home or something in town. There'd be three or four of them in a room, but usually they came with a chaperone and had to report in by a given time. I don't know, they must have slept four in a bed or something like that in the hotel because there weren't that many rooms in town, obviously.
It doesn't seem like there could have been. Yeah. I'm always intrigued where this tiny little town absorbed all these girls, where they all stayed. So was there a big Texas contingent?
Yes. Yeah, there were quite a few Texas boys up there, and there's still. You'd be surprised how many boys periodically go right out of Highland Park High School to W&L. But when I was up there, well, there was a boy by the name of Eric Gamble from here in Dallas who died shortly after college. John Ryan was there from over in Fort Worth. So there were always quite a group of Texas boys. One problem with the Texas boys is a lot of them would go up there for a year or two and then go to the University of Texas. Paul Stevens was a friend of mine that went up there. He was an SAE. Again, I don't remember whether he stayed 1 or 2 years, but then he went to the university. A boy by the name of Don Loy from here went up there, but didn't stay, I guess, over a year. Maybe even left at mid-semester. I don't recall right off hand.
Now, would they leave because they had to or because they wanted to get back to Texas?
Oh, some of both. Mm-hmm. There was a boy by the name of Dick Brown that went up, but he was very sweet on a girl here in Dallas, and he came back just because he wanted to be near his girlfriend.
That's a good reason.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, you were there. We talked about this a little bit at lunch. You were there with a bunch of really remarkable people who were there at the same time you were. Or at least they've gone on to be.
Yeah, I think
make names for themselves.
I think that's basically that, you know, it's a time frame that getting old enough that you know a lot of people. And there were some people there that are well known. Roger Mudd was there, and Pat Robinson, and John Werner. He was a beta and one of my roommates.
Was he?
Yeah.
Tell me about John Werner as a student.
Well, you need to talk to him.
Well, I'm hoping to, but, you know, like I say, it's always better if I know something about him.
John was a very, I'm sure he made good grades. He was a very astute student and was a typical politician even in college. He's done well. No, I don't want to be quoted on that. I'm surprised how well he's done.
He's married well.
Yeah. John and I, let's see, you know, at that time, the Beta House had big rooms on the third floor. There were only three of them plus a trunk closet on the third floor. And, of course, housing was pretty tight back in that day and time. And the two rooms on the end, oh, they could be anywhere from... They were bunk beds in there, so they could be anywhere from 8 to 12 people in each room. And then the center room was 6 or 8. I say I roomed with John Werner. We were up there in that melee, and you know, you room with a lot of people when you have those kind of arrangements. Lamar Weingart, who we mentioned at lunchtime, who I'm sorry I can't find in the books, he was in law school. He and I roomed together for a year or 2 years. Let's see, one or two. I guess it was 1 year. We roomed together in what was a trunk closet. It had a double bunk deck bed in, bunk bed. And bottom line is we'd have to take turns getting up because there wasn't room for two people standing up in the room at once. And especially with him because he was about 6'5" and 240-50 pounder, so
I expect you let him get up first if you wanted to.
You had to let him get dressed and out of the way before you could get out of bed.
Oh, that must have been tough if you both had class at the same time.
No.
So was Fred Vinson in your, was he a beta too?
Sure, he was a beta. Fred was a real congenial guy. One of the older fellas, 30-plus.
He was. So he was a veteran?
Oh, sure.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. If you'll go by and if you'll take the, say, the 1948 Calyx and the 51 Calyx, and you look at the pictures of the people, you can see they start to get younger as you come forward. Mm-hmm. Fred was a veteran, and... very congenial guy. As a matter of fact, I used to go to Washington, D.C. with Fred on weekends sometimes. And also Brian Bell was one of my fraternity brothers. And one weekend I went home with Fred Vinson, and we stayed at his place there with his mother and father. And we got there, and his dad... Judge Vinson asked me if I knew how to play bridge, which I did not. They handed me Gorham's book and said, read this. And we got there about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So said, read it and study it. So I read it and studied it. And then we had dinner. And then we sat down to play bridge. And that was on a Friday. And on a Sunday afternoon, we came back and we never left the bridge table other than to eat and sleep. So I learned how to play bridge.
He took it seriously, yeah. Huh? Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Huh. Now, did you know Charlie McDowell?
Charlie McDowell.
His father was in the law school. And
the name is familiar. What class was he? Do you have any idea?
He was either 50 or 51. I'm pretty sure.
Was he in the law school?
No. Charlie's gone on making a name for himself in journalism.
I really don't place him, so I probably didn't know him very well, but I find his picture, I'm sure I'll know who he is.
How about Pat Robertson? Were you friends with him?
Yes, I knew Pat.
What was he like as a student?
Well, I don't know how good he was as a student in grades, etc., but a very congenial guy, and okay.
All right, now, and you were there with Roger Mudd, too.
Yes.
And he was one of those veterans.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. Do you remember him particularly?
Oh, yeah, I knew him. He was a big dog on the campus in the journalism school and all. I didn't know him intimately, but certainly he would know who I am, and I know who he is, and we had contact.
Now, speaking of being a big dog, I got this picture of huge signs for Fred Vinson running for something.
Running for president.
President of the EC?
Of the school body, yeah.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
So he was a politician, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got lights going on and off here. Yeah. Go ahead.
Do you remember that election, and did you get involved in student politics at all?
Oh, there really wasn't all that much to student politics. It was a matter of putting up some signs, and then everybody voted, but as far as getting out and doing any door-to-door campaign or anything like that, there wasn't that. It was, you know, very low-key. You just put your name up and say, I want to be it, and maybe get some of the leadership in some of the different houses to say, okay, guys, there's election up. Vote. Can't tell you how to vote, but if you want to vote for this guy, it'd be all right with me, you know, that sort of thing.
Now, did you get involved in politics at all?
Mm-hmm.
How about the mock convention, I guess?
Yes, I took part in the mock convention, as everybody did. Whole student body was there.
Uh-huh. That was 48?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
No, 49. 48, 49
uh-huh.
a year.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Do you have memories of what it was like? That would have been the first one after the war.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was probably a little different.
Yeah.
Tell me about what you remember.
Well, as I remember, one of my friends dressed up as a very pregnant lady. And another one was dressed up as would-be husband, and I was the one marching behind with a shotgun, and the pitch was that it's a shotgun wedding, but she's casting two votes for, and I don't even remember who we were assigned for, whoever we were assigned. I didn't see a picture in here, but I'm sure there was pictures that were taken of the whole group coming down.
I think that was one of the years you got it right. Did you nominate Dewey? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was one of the years they got it right. Well, the mock convention is still a very big deal.
Yeah.
It's one of the big shows we put on. Now, how about one of the things that I think makes Washington and Lee really standout is the honor system.
Mm-hmm.
What are your memories of how you learned about the honor system, and what did it mean to you?
Well, basically, it worked on the basis that you were expected, and there was no effort that I ever knew of by anybody to cheat, but you were expected to always conduct yourself on the basis that there could be no suspicion of you, and you were expected to do your work and tell the truth, and bottom line is it worked. Now, I know what took place with the football team later on, and obviously the honor system was much more important than football because they did away with the football team for a period of time. And when they did bring it back, they did it on a much lesser scale. I think it's probably one of the most important things about WNL is the honor system.
Has it been a presence in your life since you left there? I mean, is it something that you still think about or you're aware of?
Oh, yeah. But of course, you know, I'm in the business world where, I don't have to worry about that sort of thing. Whatever I do is, you have a certain amount of security around an office, but that, as far as I'm concerned, that's just to make sure your files don't get lost. I think the honor system is very important. It is a disadvantage for an American businessman, especially doing business overseas, because corruption does take place in most foreign lands. And that's something we don't ever participate in. I'm not trying to be self-righteous, because if you ever get involved in that sort of stuff, there's no end to it. And we've walked away from many a transaction because it smelled. If it's not on the up and up where you don't mind anybody looking at it, I don't want to be involved in it. So, yeah, I'd say it had effect on my life and still has effect on it, and that's the way we run our business.
It certainly seems to have made a lasting impression on most people.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I often wonder why. I'm very aware now that there's this huge Washington and Lee network of people who didn't necessarily go to school at the same time, but it seems like if you know somebody went to Washington and Lee, you know they're okay. You can trust them. So I think that's a real lasting benefit to the honor system.
Yeah.
And the other thing that impresses me about Washington and Lee is the speaking tradition. The idea that everyone says hello to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Was that very much in...
That was very much the case, but of course I came out of the Hill School where it was also the custom to speak to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't all that much difference for me. But I note this today. I still am probably a little out of place because I speak to people all the time on the street, etc. And I get some funny looks for doing it because most people walk by and look away.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's their demeanor to do it. And I always make a point to speak to everybody. And
is this a message?
No, I think there's a overload switch on when the bulb gets too hot, it goes off until it cools off. So
okay. It's kind of exciting. You never know what's going to happen here. Well, now I have one last question on my list, and then anything else you want to talk about. But I have heard more than once, and I can't begin to tell you, don't ask me who told me this because it was a long time ago, before I really knew who you were, but somebody told me that you bought a gas station in Lexington. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Yeah, I didn't physically buy the station. The station belonged to the dealer. But I bought the lease on it from a fellow who, it was a Sinclair station. Of course, Sinclair no longer exists. Remember, it was the picture of the dinosaur, the brontosaurus. And anyway, it was just below the Beta House there. And I guess I owned and operated it for 2 years, two school years and one school summer. And so I learned at a very early age I'd rather be in a business where I don't have to deal with the end user. I'd rather, just because there's so much work and contact that has to go to it.
So why'd you do it? Why'd you have a gas station? That's unusual for a student to have a gas station.
Well, my father in the oil and gas business, of course, he would have told me not to do it had I asked him. I didn't ask him. I understand that when he found out I had done it, that he said, well, he's going to learn a good lesson. But anyway, I thought it was a way to make a little money. And bottom line, I could run down there after school and work, make sure that I had to have hired people with it because it stayed open till midnight. I even tried staying open all night, but we were so confined there we couldn't handle trucks, big trucks. Bottom line is I just thought it would be a good way to learn business, and then it also was a way for me to study. In other words, after dinner at the fraternity house, well, I'd go down and keep the station open till 12 o'clock and take my books with me and sit up there and do my homework and studying between filling up cars. And of course, you didn't have that much business that you didn't have time to do it. I do remember one disaster. A guy came in, he bought some new tires and wanted me to change them out for him. And I told him, I said, okay, I'll do it. But I said, I'll tell you, I've never changed a tire before, but I'm willing to try. And after about an hour and a half getting the first one done, he says, I understand, thank you.
He didn't make me do the other three. So.
Well, were there many students who had businesses going on or were working like that?
One boy had a slot machine in the fraternity house that was business. He made money every now and then. It would hang up though and it would pay out. It would give out, it was a nickel slot machine, it would give out nickels regardless of what came up on the front. So I think finally he pitched the machine out. In other words, you could stand there and just put a nickel in until you get three or four back each time until it emptied. But mechanical problems put him out of business. A lot of people, I don't know of a lot of people that were in business or trying to do something like that. But, you know, it was always a way to earn some money, so I just thought I'd give it a try. The reason I got out of it was that summertime when you weren't there, you just literally had no control over it and things went to pot in a hurry. Right. So I figured after two school years, I wasn't going to try another summer.
So what'd you do then? You found somebody to take your lease?
I sold it, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, that was an education that you
learned.
It was. You learned you got to stay around and watch the business.
That's right.
Well, we've gotten through my list. Is there anything we haven't talked about?
No. No big questions.
We didn't on tape. We didn't talk about the bicentennial, that you were there during the bicentennial. Mm-hmm. Do you remember any of the events or anything that happened?
Yeah, you know, the bicentennial was a big affair. I don't remember that there were any great social events that went with it or anything of that sort, but I do remember it was very much on everybody's mind and were we going to have a good team, etc. Other than that, I don't remember an awful lot about it.
Now, a couple of the pictures, I only have a few pictures from the bicentennial, but they always prominently figure President Gaines.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was he as much a presence on campus as he appears to have been?
Yeah, he was very much in everybody's mind. He was a dynamic speaker. And, he was, you know, very respected, very looked up to, or whatever you want to have it. Whatever happened to him, out of curiosity?
He retired, but stayed in Lexington, and then died very shortly thereafter, just a couple of years after he retired.
Okay.
But he stayed pretty close and actually continued to help raise funds for the school.
Yeah.
Does
the president still live in the house up there?
In the Lee House.
The Lee House?
Sure does. Sure does.
And is the garage, the Lee Travelers stable, still the garage for the Lee House?
It sure is. It sure is. Well, I sure want to thank you. I appreciate this.
All right.
It's been a real pleasure for me.
Good. Who all are you going to be talking to here in town?
Okay, we've got one more story coming.
Okay, well, as concerns the XGIs, and I should have thought of this, you mentioned, did any other boys do any things to earn money? This boy, Toby Hansen, as I recall, he was an ex-paratrooper. And he used to go to the air shows that might be around the country on weekends. And the bottom line, he'd take his parachute and figure out how to get to the nearest air show, and he'd do one or two jumps, and he usually got $25 a jump, so he could earn $50 on a weekend making air shows. There was another boy named Posey Starkey, who was a fraternity brother. Both of these are fraternity brothers. And he was ex-service. And I don't remember exactly what he'd do, but he'd take off on jaunts like that for a weekend or so. Then there was some boy in the house, I remember, and I can't put the name to it, that when the Korean War broke out, he had been a sergeant in the U.S. Army, but he had been assigned to Korea and had, as a advisor for the South Korean Army, for several years at the end of World War II. When the war broke out, he was in law school, and he got his orders 2 days after the North Koreans made their move, and his orders were to report to Tokyo and pick up his uniform. And we got a letter back from him about a month later. And in literally within 10 days after he got his notice, he was in the front line in Korea. So that sort of thing was happening with the XGIs that, you know, had been in the service and then came back. It was very unusual times.
Well, how about younger people like you? Did you get drafted? Was there a draft?
There was a draft when I was in high school, and it ended, I think, my senior year. Nope, take it back. Since I was going to college, and I was a science major. That's one of the reasons I took science. I was deferred from the draft. Then when the Vietnam War broke out, no, I'll take it back. They had stopped calling up people on the draft just as I got out of high school. Then when they started on the Korean War, they reinstituted the draft, but since I was in college with a science major, I was deferred. And then I was married, and while there was still a draft out there, they weren't drafting anybody that was married. And then they started drafting married with one child, etc., two child. I was always a child ahead of them, so I missed it. And finally, I guess it was Nixon that did away with the draft. Who mm-hmm. was it?
It was during Nixon's.
Yeah, it was Nixon that did away with the draft. So then, you know, I just happened to be in there where I didn't have to go, and I didn't go down and sign up.
Were your classmates signing up when Korea broke out?
No. I mean, it was strictly a matter of being called up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It wasn't like World War II where people rushed off to enlist. I think the world had enough of fighting and they weren't anxious to go halfway around the world.
Yeah, I would think. I would think your generation would be very realistic about what it meant to go away to war.
Okay.
Thanks.